Well, good evening and welcome to the fourth presentation in this, our 11th series of talks on faraway places with strange sounding names, sponsored by the Friends of WKU Libraries and the Kentucky Museum. My name is Brian Kutz, and as head of the Department of Library Public Services, I coordinate this series with my absent colleague, Peggy Wright, at home recovering from the flu, and with help from our webmaster, Haiwan Wan, and Brian Carson, our reference coordinator, who's absent with his wife at the hospital in Vanderbilt. Daniel Peach, down on the floor here, designed the posters and here taking pictures, and our technical specialist tonight is the library's technology coordinator, David Runner. Our speaker tonight is a native of Hubei Province in China, whose life is inextricably connected with recent Chinese history. At the age of 1.5, he moved with his mother, who's here with us tonight from China, to be with his father, who found employment in the textile industry in the city of Tianjin. He was influenced, he said, by a childhood friend who introduced him to the wonders of the children's library at the local Confucius Temple, where he developed a lifelong love of reading and a desire to be a teacher. His education was interrupted in the fourth grade with the outbreak of Mao's Cultural Revolution, which closed the schools for 2 years. When schools did reopen, he completed middle school and was admitted to a teacher training school, where he began to study English. He recalls that because of the high cost of electricity, he often did a lot of his reading outside under the street lamps. The rise to power of Deng Xiaoping and a desire to modernize China prompted the reopening of universities, and Haiwan was admitted to one of the first classes at the prestigious Nankai University in 1977, where he studied English and where his future father-in-law was a professor of English and one of the first Chinese to translate Ivanhoe and the works into classical Chinese. In 1988, he received a Fulbright to study American history at Indiana University, where he obtained his MA and then stayed on to do a Master of Library Science. Following the events of Tiananmen Square in 1989, he was granted refugee status in the U.S. and later became a U.S. citizen. After working briefly as a media specialist in Florida, he joined the faculty of WKU Libraries in 1997, where his interest in Chinese folklore led to frequent trips back to China to collect and translate Chinese folktales. He's the author of Magic Lotus Lantern and Tales from the Han Chinese, published by Libraries Unlimited in 2006, and Princess Peacock, Tales from the Other Peoples of China, published by Libraries Unlimited in 2008. In 2010, he edited This Is China for Berkshire Press, and in recently led a 2011 WKU winter term class on a tour of China from Hong Kong to Beijing. Here to talk about China's yesterday, today, and tomorrow, a city called Tianjin, please welcome Haiwan Wan.
Thank you, Dr. Kutz, for such a wonderful introduction. And thank you all for coming. Today, I'm going to talk about China's change. So the word today is change. China's change from yesterday to today, and where China going to change in the future. But we'll focus our attention on one of the cities I know the best, because that's where I grew up, Tianjin. Tianjin actually is one of the four cities, like you all know D.C., right? District of Columbus, which does not belong to any of the states. Tianjin is kind of in that status, along with Beijing, Shanghai. Can you guess the fourth one, which is new? Chongqing. Uh-huh, yes, that's right. Chongqing, in the center of China. The Chinese government want the Chongqing to be the leader to develop the West, because right now all the areas in the East Coast are comparatively developed. And Tianjin is one of the four Zhixiashi in Chinese, called the metropolitans, under the direct administration of the central government. In China, they call central government instead of federal government. In Tianjin, the city itself, somewhere like 8 million people to 10 million people, plus the surrounding areas where the counties are, with some of them are farmers further away from the suburbs. And altogether, it got 12 to 14 million. So it's a very, very big city. So this is China. What does it look like? like a rooster, right? Okay, Tianjin is right over here. See? It's right over here, right? And very close to Beijing. Mm-hmm. If today, if you take a train like this, the bullet train, that's somewhere like a 70 miles, half an hour. Because it runs at 202 miles an hour. And so it's very close to Beijing, the capital. Here is the harbor. Tianjin is one of the biggest harbors in North China. Now, let's take a look at Tianjin in the big picture of China. How old would you think China is? The title of my book is This is China, the First 5,000 Years. And the Chinese always say, oh, we have a history of 5,000 years. But if a history that's not recorded by words, you know, it's kind of shady over there. When the Chinese go to Egypt, they found that they have scripts that trace back 3,400 BC, and so is the Mesopotamia. The first recognizable form of Chinese characters so far are 3,500 years old. So the Chinese were kind of well, we have such a long history, we can only do as much as 3,500 years. So in 1996, the Chinese government initiated a big project involving 170 experts in all fields, even including radiologists and also archaeologists, historians. They all came together to try to push back the Chinese history. And they tried to find the lineage of the kings of earlier dynasties. And they were partially successful. Though they kind of pushed back the Chinese history from over 2,000 years to over 4,000 years. There was still 800 or 900 years left. That part of the history was still a myth. But in 2003, they found a tomb of the Western Zhou dynasty. This is the years when the dynasty existed. And they found a lot of bronze vessels, 27 I believe, with 3,000 characters carved. And they were very, very precious. For the first time, they saw so many characters all together, describing the 12 kings all together in the Western Zhou dynasty. There were 37 kings. And 12 of them were all described there. So it was remarkable. It was remarkable. That gave the Chinese some satisfaction. They finally saw something substantial. So as I said, the rest of the 5,000 years are still a myth. Like, for instance, a big giant pushed the heavier stuff down with the feet, and the light ones, the positive ones, up as the sky, or another goddess created humans with mud. Okay, here is a chronicle of the Chinese history, starting from the myth, the age of the five rulers, as people believed, and then starting from the Xia Dynasty until the People's Republic of China. And the Xia Dynasty actually was pretty controversial. And people can pin down the lineage of the kings of the Zhou Dynasty and partially the Shang Dynasty. So the Shang Dynasty over there, scholars either in the West or in China pretty much have no problem with that. But a lot of people still have problems with the Xia Dynasty. And some people especially, the historians in the West still doubt if there was such a dynasty. But the Chinese argue that where would the Shang Dynasty come from? And they also find something that can prove it, but it's still not like the scripts or Chinese characters, so they cannot pin it down. So, to remember all of these Chinese dynasties, and there's a song. Da 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 da. So that will help you too, right? See, Shang Zhou Qin Huan, Shang Zhou Qin Huan, Sui Tang Song, Sui Tang Song, Yuan Ming Qin Republic, Yuan Ming Qin Republic, Mao Zedong. right? In this song, they omit the Xia because that's controversial. Anyway, all of these dynasties, they are milestones. They are the dynasties when China were united, were one. And the Chinese history is kind of a coming together, the splitting, coming together, splitting. Of course, coming together is the main culture. And that's in the blood, have to come together. They split sometimes. So between the dynasties, there were a lot of splits. Some of you may know the Romans of Three Kingdoms. That happened after the Han. And then Sui united it. And then it broke again, broke down into several dynasties and 10 kingdoms. And then Tang united again. And then the Song, and then came the people from the north, the Mongols. And they invaded the Song. They occupied northern part of China, and the remnant of the Song dynasty fled to the south. So you have the northern Song and the southern Song. And then the Yuan, finally, Chinggis Khan's grandson, overrun the entire China and established the Yuan dynasty. It's a different word from my last name, Yuan. It's the same word as the Chinese dollar. And then the Ming, Zhu Yuanzhang, the peasant leader, led the rebellion and overthrew the Yuan, became the first emperor of the Ming dynasty. But during the Ming dynasty, China see the glimpse of capitalism. When suddenly, another foreigner, the Manchus. Today, Manchu is one of the 56 ethnic Chinese groups. So, in those days, they were foreigners, right? And then they invaded China and overruled China for 400 years until 1911. They invaded China in 1644. And the last emperor of Ming hanged himself on the hill behind the Forbidden City. So my students went there and saw the tree where he hanged himself. Okay, there's two sides of the coin, of course. The Qing dynasty has the largest territory on the map. At the beginning, China was still very strong in the world. And you see over here, this is the actual map of Qing dynasty, but you can't see it clearly. Over here, it's a redrawn, but not quite exact. Over here, this is today's China, in the latter part of the Qing dynasty, very, very close. They think China had everything, and China was the greatest in the world. They didn't need any trade with anybody, but they were self-sufficient, they thought. And so everybody should come to China to, you know, to kind of pay tribute to them, to show respect to them. But at that time, you know, in the West, they have a lot of mercantilism, and they try to sell stuff. They try to open China, but China wouldn't open. So what would they do, right? So conflicts would begin to rise. So the British, they have the companies in India. They produce a lot of opium. So they try to smuggle the opium to China. And all these Chinese are hooked to the opium. These are the Chinese who are smoking the opium. And finally, the Qing dynasty realized that, oh my, if all the Chinese do this, we're all done. So one of the generals, he led the campaign to, you know, like our tea party, right? We dump the tea into the sea, they burn all the opium. But of course, the Western powers wouldn't take that lying down. So they began to send in their gunboats to fight. And the first opium war started in 1839 until 1842. And they came over from here, because that's India over here, to Hong Kong, and then to Xiamen, and then to Shanghai, and then move up to Tianjin. And over here, this is the only battle, Sanyuanli in Guangzhou. That's where when the Chinese won the battle. And so that was written into the Chinese textbooks. All the Chinese over here knew that story. When we visited Guangzhou last month, we went there. We walk on the street. They still have the signs like a street of fighting British. And they also have the monuments. Yeah, they have the monument and dedicated to the martyrs who died in the fight against the British invading troops. This is a picture portraying the battle. My students, this is the monument. So you can see it. This is the street. See? Fighting British big street. So we walk along the street. So we were there, right? That's interesting. And then the Second Opium War started in 1856, not long after. And this is the route they go. And then they broke into Tianjin and even to Beijing. As the consequences of two wars, at that time Qing Dynasty, you know, were very, very weak. And they lost all the wars, of course. So the treaties were signed. Of course, the Chinese today call it unequal treaties because the Qing Dynasty were in no position to, you know, to sign those treaties where they were too weak. And the Western powers are too strong. This is a picture they still kept. Okay, now, as the result of the First War, Opium War, they signed the Nanjing Treaty, grant the Western powers, particularly the British and the French, these cities as the treaty ports. They opened them up. Guangzhou, Moi, Ningbo, Fuzhou, Shanghai, and also at that time they seized Hong Kong permanently. And later they leased the bigger part of it. It's called a new territory. That's why the lease. But that part, and French and American concessions also followed soon afterwards. As a result of the Second Opium War, more than 80 treaty ports were established. British got these, French got these, and Russia and the United States, the Treaty of Beijing, British got Tianjin. Okay, so you see the black dots? These are the treaty ports. It depends on who tells the story, right? Sometimes when you open the city, it might be good for, you know, for the development of the country. I know today people might rethink of it. China opened them today by themselves anyway. Okay, now the concessions, Zhujie, the leased territories. They have these rights. And in Wuhan, we saw this. It's called a big French concession. In Shanghai, we also see these are original. These are original. And this is the British territory. Ironically, the architecture in the concessions are better than those in their own country. So they spend a lot of money building better houses in China. These are the models made after the real houses that's still there. Chinese renovated them. I will show you more. Okay, now, the good story about some of the concessions during the Second World War when the Japanese invaded China, when they massacred the Chinese in Nanjing, the then capital of the nationalist government, a lot of the concessions became their haven. One of the German, German concessions saved even somewhere like 30,000 Chinese or 10,000 Chinese. So they called it the Chinese version of Schindler. But on the other side of the coin, in the background, in Shanghai, they have these rules. The first one, the gardens are reserved for the foreign community. Look at this. Dogs and bicycles are not admitted. This is taken for granted over here, right? Everywhere, right? And then the Chinese had a problem with it. So this is what is in Bruce Lee's movie, which is very patriotic. They interpret it this way. No dogs and Chinese are permitted. The Chinese are saying, oh my God. And in Chinese culture, if you find the Chinese, all the proverbs are dogs are negative. Today, of course, they love dogs. They all raise dogs, like the Westerners. They have pets. But before, there's a story. The guy you saw in the picture who signed the treaty, it could be a joke, could be real. One British ambassador left China, gave him a gift. It's a dog. And then he wrote him a letter in Britain and asked him, how is your dog? He said, well, it tastes great. Oh, man. cultural difference. Okay, now, later, you know, the concessions, the Chinese have their perspective, their view, whatever, as a response to the Western influences, anger of the unequal treaties, and also concern over the land appropriation by the churches, And so there was another uprising. And the people who think they are very powerful, they practice the kung fu, they thought they were bulletproof. Went to extremes to kill any foreigner they saw. So they kill everybody. At the beginning, even the Qing dynasty, the Qing government supported them, were behind them. And eventually they besieged the Beijing Legion Quarter to protect their own people. Somewhere like 40,000 troops came to China from these countries. They formed a coalition. It's called the Eight Nation Alliance. So if you say the Ba Guo Lian Jun, Eight Nation Alliance in Chinese, it's pejoratory in history. And these are the photos of some of the soldiers and their officers. And the aftermath, of course, occupation of Beijing continued for a year. And there are some atrocities like looting, killing, and raping, of course. Even Russians, I heard that when they went to Germany, they also do the same thing, right? Reparations of so much money, worth so much dollars today to the foreigners. Americans, they used the money to build a university, which is now today is the best, Tsinghua University. Japan, of course, took advantage of that. They occupied Manchuria and some other countries over there in the alliance who didn't have concessions elsewhere. They also have their share of the concessions where? In Tianjin. Okay, the Qing Dynasty, of course. People think that's a humiliation. Think the government was too weak. And that fed to the nationalists and led by Dr. Sun Yat-sen. And this is the headquarters in Wuhan where the 1911 revolution started, eventually overthrew the last dynasty, that's Qing. And our students were taking a picture over there. This is Sun Yat-sen. And these are the original soldiers in 1911 in the same location. You see the building? Isn't that cool? We were there. Uh-huh. All right, now Tianjin is the most least city. There are nine concessions. And all of these, in a year, I don't have to read every one of them. As a result, Tianjin today, luckily, even during the Cultural Revolution, they were not all destroyed. But of course, some of them were dilapidated. But today, they renovated all of them. They kind of used them as a tourist attraction. And so Tianjin today has become a museum of foreign architecture. Let me show you. Okay, this is the Tianjin map. I do have a map. Tianjin map. You see the color over here. Now, this is the old city where my mom and dad used to live, and I used to live. And this is where my father-in-law used to live. And but all over here, there are foreign concessions. You see the color?
Austria and Hungary.
Italy, Russian, Belgium, Japan, and France, and the United Kingdom, the largest, Germany. Fortunately, I could find postcards of those days, early 20th century, when the people either have the drawings of the photos of concessions, they made them into postcards and sent them back, and they still have kept them. So this is Yingguo, British concession. This is British again, yes? France, and this is Italy. Mm-hmm. Japanese, better houses than in their own country. Russian, and then you see as a bird's eye view of the concessions. And today, you see the houses were renovated. If you stand there, you don't think you're in China. And that's me. Looks like a foreign country, huh? All the concessions, it's fun. Yeah, go to Tianjin and then take a walk and take pictures. It's so fun. If you go to Tianjin, you can go to nine countries at one time. Yeah, they have a big Catholic church still in use. All right, bird's eye view again today. All right, now the Chinese quarters, of course, is another story for old Tianjin. Now, the changes. Look at this. In every big city in China, you have a drum tower. You have a drum tower. In the morning, you ring the bell, and they tell everybody to get up. And then in the evening, you hear the drum. to tell you, okay, it's time to go to sleep. They have a drum tower. Unfortunately, remember, in 2008, the only incident happened that's on the drum tower in Beijing. That's when the father-in-law of our American women's volleyball coach got killed by a crazy guy. Drum tower. Tianjin has a drum tower too. Now, it's renovated today. And then also, when you go into it, the streets look like this. And this is where I borrow books from. That's the Confucius Temple. Many, many years ago, over half a century ago. Now, when we talk about the Cultural Revolution and Mao era, did you see much change except for the people here? Not much change, right? Not much change. Bicycle and the people. So this is in the 70s, 60s. And okay, here is the Nine, it's called the Nanshi. It's an area that's on the southern side of the old city. This is before, of course. And before China opened up, before the economic reform started in 1978, 2 years after Mao's death, it still looked like this. And then today, and my students at in one of the restaurants. This is a mall of over 200 restaurants. A mall of nothing but restaurants. And this is a railway station. Many, many years ago. And today, big change, right? And this is the church that's very close to my sister's home. There are nothing over there. It's called the Wang Hai Lou Tower, where you can see the sea. Remember, there's still half an hour away, the sea. That means there was no buildings, no structures. You can see the sea over there. But that's kind of a hyperbole, but still, you know, it means that there was nothing. But today, it was renovated. And you see over there? And I took this, the same location, I took this over here. I took this in 2004, this was in 2008. 4 years difference. That shows how fast China developed. And this is the bridge long, long time ago. The same bridge. See the bridge? Mm-hmm. And even over here, you see this building and this building? You see here? Identical, right? The same. So basically, I happened to shoot the same picture from the same location in different years. But you see the difference over here? That shows how fast it develops. Change. And I took these also in 2003 and today, the same street. Exactly the same street. Today. And that bridge, right? Bang. Right? Mm-hmm. Okay. And we went to the museum, a museum that has the models of the old city. This is one of the quarters. It's the southeast quarter. Well, that's where my mom, my dad, and we live. And I show it to my students. And the houses used to be like this. And I think in the early 20th century, they all look like this. You see, in the Qing Dynasty, they still have this pigtail. That's the year, that's the mark of the Qing Dynasty, before 1911. You see the houses? Not much of a change, right? In Mao's era. Until 1980, 19. And then my wife points at exactly the house where I grew up. And today, oh, there is a movie. Can we show that? I took. You see when? 1994. And the big video camera is still very, very fresh in China. Everybody look at it like a little doggy or cat, and they're looking at the camera. Look at that. And my mom told me they're all married because it's 1996. This is my son. He's now working in the admissions office. Looks like me, huh? Okay, so this shows exactly the alley from the map, and the pictures, the houses, how they look like. This is even after renovation. We did ourselves. Do you see this picture? The house, it's already torn down in 1996. And I'm standing on the whole area where the old city used to be. They're all torn down. And then replaced by the street. Mm-hmm. This is the city. And a lot of people move to apartments like this. And the house is kind of it's a big change. They have air conditioning, TV, little puppy. And that's her. Is making when somebody come, you can see them. You can say, hey, open the door for security. And this is their house. They already have a flat screen today. Replaced it already. And this is their subdivision. Uh-huh. And here's a video of residence that can show you. And I shot this in October 2010 when I went back. This is the subdivision where her brother and her sister-in-law live. It's pretty cool. Better than the one you saw. That's a change. And if you have extra money, you can also buy some extra house, like I don't look like America, still learning. And you have two puppies, if you like. You can grow something in the backyard. My brother also has his own apartment. At that time, when I shot the picture, it was still in renovation. In China, when you buy a new apartment, it was not renovated. It's up to you to renovate it to your taste. So, and I'm not going to show you this again, but to save time. And okay, the new look of Tianjin, some of the pictures, of course. And there are also places that still need to be renovated. There's still people who are living in very poor conditions. But on the whole, you know, the change is taking place. So these are real pictures. And you can see, of course, you pick the best ones, you know. And a lot of superhighways. And Tianjin is one of the car-making city, like a big car maker. And also have light rail. That's not a super train, but light rail. And that one would take you to the harbor in half an hour. And this is the pedestrian street. Basically, it's a shopping area. And you see a Kentucky chicken, Walmart. This is how the Walmart in Chinese. Right? It's called Wu Er Ma, basically the sound. And this is Warner. You see the Western, the American influence a lot. And okay, this is the night view. Tianjin claims to be the largest in Asia, or even in the world, they say. This is the other part of Tianjin that's close to the coast, the harbor. You see the harbor, the sea. Uh-huh. That city, it's a kind of a satellite city. It's called a district. And now the central government gave that district the same status as they did to Shenzhen and Guangzhou and Shanghai Pudong. So it becomes the third district in China that had huge benefits in policies. So they can do a lot more than some other areas in China. So over here, it's called the economic belt. So Tianjin, that area becomes a new economic belt. And in there, you have the Airbus assembly line. By last year, they already produced 11 airplanes for Airbus. Assemble them, of course. And they have the ethane producer, an oil refinery. And also the largest, the shipyard in northern China. And the GDP increased above the national average, which is 10, but it's 16. And since 2007, they invested so much that they put together is even more than Chinese investment within 57 years. And only a few years ago, Tianjin was nicknamed One Chicken Yi Ji, one bowl of noodle Yi Mian, and a bottle of wine Yi Jiu. These are the best thing they could produce. The Yi Ji, by the way, the Chinese have only altogether 420 syllables, so they have a lot of homophones, like the picture over here. This, by the way, is one of the Tianjin's folk art. You have the fish in Chinese, pronounced after me, Yu. And the lotus, Lian. If you say Lian Yan Yu Yu, it means for years running, you will have more than enough in your family. You see, the Yu pronounces the same as more than enough, another Yu. In Chinese characters, they're different, you can tell. But in sounds, you can't. Homophone. Words that share the same phone, right? Lian, lotus. But at the same time, it share the same sound as Lian for years running. Okay? So the Ji over here is chicken blood. It refers to the cell phone, Ji, Shou Ji, a hand machine. The Chinese call it hand machine, Shou Ji. So, because Motorola went to China, went to Tianjin for very early. They were proud of Motorola. They were proud of a Taiwan noodle producer, and also they're proud of a French wine, a winery. It's called a Dynasty wine. So they produced that. They thought, we're good. Oh, great. But now today, they have 3G, 3G, Yijian, and Yixing, the three flying machines. Airplanes, different. One is the unmanned, one is helicopter, that's big to China, and also the assembling the Airbus, and they do satellites too. So it's kind of a big development economically also at the same time. And planning for the future, as I said, this is the picture I took in 2010, believe me. On the one side, it's developed. On the other, it's waiting to be developed. So there are still places like this everywhere in China, believe me. And it's still waiting for development over here. It's already kind of being torn down everywhere. So there was China, they again play on sound. To tear things down, the word is Chai. Na is a grammatical word, which means a continuous tense. China is being torn down. So China is being torn down. But you see everywhere, the debris, reconstructions, so China is China. All right, now, they're planning for the future. Neighborhoods like that, now it's on the drawing board, will look like this in a few years. Hopefully, they're building the new Tianjin at the same time they can preserve some of the traditions. And they did something. They kept a few streets for tourists, but hopefully they'll do more. And this is the pictures you will see. It will be the pictures of the future on their drawing boards. Future. And I also think of green, building green, future, energy. These are the transportation. It's lagging behind Guangzhou big time. In Guangzhou and Shenzhen, you can. I took the students there. Basically, we can go anywhere in the subway, but not in Tianjin. So Tianjin is still building. This is their plan. And this is the sea, and that's that part of the city that's granted the preferable policies to develop. So this is their plan. And this is the, they put it up in 3D. You can't take a picture over there, but ironically, I got it from the web. Yeah, I got a camera. No, you can't take it. That's why I got it from the web. Even better. Okay, now I will show you how fast, only a few slides left. I'll be showing you how fast China changes. There was a time when China changes slow because of Mao. And also, not only him. And after the 1911, China saw a lot of suffering. The warlords, and then the civil war, not one, but two, and then in between the Japanese invasion. And after that, Mao's revolution after revolution culminated in the Cultural Revolution. That's 10 years. And so now you can see from 1930s or 20s, I can't pin down the dates, but from the way it looks, this is a trolley and the rickshaw. It could be in the 30s, let's say 30s at latest. And this is what I took. You see the child over here that's in the video. I took in 1994. How long? Over half a century. Not much of a change. But of course, people wear it kind of a differently. Bicycles. But in 2008, the cars, 2010. This is, I was sitting in a taxi and shooting the people in the front. And I was joking. This is one of the reasons why I like to go back to China. And people ask, the car or the girl? So this is the daughter of my brother-in-law's friend. She offered to take us to on a joyride because she got a new car, a Jaguar. And this is nephew. They got a Beetle. That's his wife. And in 2010, so cars are big. And today, you know that China has become the largest car market. A few years ago, a professor on our campus, he wanted to publish an article about Chinese car industry, and nobody would like to publish it. That's cool. I don't believe it. And now, he was right. And Shenzhen, we went to Shenzhen. And Shenzhen was set up, this area bordering Hong Kong. It used to be a village, partly a fishing village. And when Hong Kong was about to return to China, that's in the 80s, and they were jittery. They were, oh my God, we're going back from democracy to communists. So Deng Xiaoping was smart. He said, well, he carved up a piece of land on the Chinese side, bordering it, to let it grow by itself in the capitalist way as a buffer zone. As if to tell Hong Kong, instead of you coming back to us, we're going to you. We're becoming you. Look at that. All the pictures we took on our trip last month. And from top of this building, this one, we saw all around us like this. Huge. Chinese American now, I was amazed. Only 30 years ago, it was still a little village. This is Deng Xiaoping with Thatcher, the Prime Minister of Britain, talking about the return of Hong Kong. So they have a wax figure over there, above in there, sitting in the building. And Shanghai, can you tell the identity of this building and this building over here, right? And this building is this building, right? We were proud of them at that time in 2002, and stood there and took a picture. This is Larry, he just got a professor on campus and just retired. And today, a bullet train, this is the plan. By 2020, it will connect almost every part of China. Except Tibet, as there's too many mountains to do. And let's see if I got a view. Did you see the speed? 325 already. And that's one of my students coming together. Yeah, wouldn't drop. At 210 miles an hour. Okay. Don't mistake me. China is still, in many areas are still very poor, poor people, and very polarized. Even the employees, the difference between the employees, I'm not talking about the millionaires and stuff. The difference is 15 times. But the speed of development is very, very dazzling. It's making people, you know, think, where would China go, right? Would China, you know, be so powerful in the future, so big, and to be dangerous? And China would argue that, well, you know, in history, we were very, very strong. You know, between 1405 and 1433, China had the largest fleet and the biggest boats. But they didn't put the guns on there. They travel all these places. Even there's a book in Barcelona, the author argued that they even came to North America before Columbus. I don't know. But these are recorded. Anyway, this is one of the boats. But still, they came back. They didn't station there. They didn't leave anything except for some genes. And some of the Africans claim that they're Chinese. And the Chinese also right now marketing themselves like a Confucius Institute, telling people, oh, we're peaceful, you know. We are advocating He, a harmony. The He means people with people and people with nature. All right. So, any questions? Thank you very much. Thanks.
Questions?
You got 850 million people that are making $3 to $6 a day. They're going through this massive growth.
I know.
Eliminating squalor and developing a country that looks like Western Europe.
Yeah. You've got the two sides
but
of it.
But you've got a disconnect developing between upper echelon
and the poor. Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Any country that goes through two, three, four decades of large growth is going to have a point where it stops.
That's right.
The Chinese are prepared for the type of mm-hmm. problems that they're going to have with the masses.
That's a great question. So you all hear it, right? The polarization and the development, and there would be a point when China would stop, and then what would they do with the poor and the very rich? They begin to realize the problem to begin with. A couple of years ago, they opened all the museums free to the public. And just recently, they opened the public libraries free to the public. The youth didn't use to. So that means they use some of the money to put in there to share with the people. And also, they're trying to build health insurance to cover over 90% of the people, 1.3 billion. When they first learned about market economy, they learned the wrong way. The colleges, public health, like hospitals, they put them all on the market. You have to make your own money. So as a result, they make money out of the parents, the students, and the students themselves. And at the same time, doctors and drugstore, they're connected. There's no separate drugstore. The doctors prescribe the drug, and the more it's prescribed, the more money they make. So they have to kind of reform that. They all realize that. They are now planning a big reform, and it's in the process. And of course, that would be a great, big problem if they don't resolve it in the right way. It might be a huge challenge in the future. I mean, they realize that. They also raise the basic salary for those who are doing the basic jobs. Today, you know, the Chinese New Year. When the Chinese New Year comes, and all the people, no matter where they are, they will come back, just like our Thanksgiving, come back to their own family. And then, in the big cities now, they're not coming back anymore, a lot of them today. Because they can make almost the same now in their own location than in the big cities, which means some money are flowing that way to the West. And then they are close to the kids, to the parents. So the big cities in the East now had a problem of hiring anyone unless they raise the salaries. But if they do so, their imports will be affected. So they have problems.
Other questions? Well, I
guess you've mesmerized us all.
I explained it all. Okay, thank you.
Now that I know the evening where we're going to do our